distributed the notes, and I want to distribute. There's one other thing. Well, actually, there are two other things, but the third one I'm saving until we get to the. But for next week, one of the things that we're reading is the Prolegomenon to the study of the emerging religious consciousness of our time. And in there, Lonergan mentions a 7-point program proposed by Raimundo Panikkar at a meeting on the World Congress of Philosophy held in Varna, Bulgaria. So I have a copy of Panikkar's 7 points. There's a value in being having the Lonergan archives right there, because I figured he's probably got this in the archives, and sure enough, there it was. So you may each have a copy of this to look at in connection with that. I gave you yours already. Okay. And Jeff. So that's in connection with the article on
Prolegomenon.
No?
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Has everybody got one?
Yeah.
Okay, so to the things for this week, we have moral theology and the human sciences, we have self-transcendence, and we have mission and the spirit. So, starting with moral theology and the human sciences. This was a paper. Lonergan was one of the original members of the International Theological Commission, along with the real giants all got on there. I don't know whether Skillebeck did, but Rahner was there, von Balthasar was there, Ratzinger was there, so he was in with the big shots, as he would put it. This was one of the papers that he wrote for that commission. And Fred Crowe edited this paper for inclusion in Method, Journal of Lonergan Studies, before we put it in here. And Fred tells us in the edition there that in the covering letter to Cardinal Schaefer, who was at that time in charge of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and was also the chair of the International Theological Commission, and this I find very interesting, Lonergan indicated in the letter that projects that would implement his ideas in this paper, quote, involve so much collaboration with non-theologians or so much creativity on the part of theologians that their investigation cannot be fitted into current structures of the theological commission. And what he's calling for here is more than the theological commission, in other words, was prepared to do. And it's basically this thing which is Lonergan is so keen on in so many things is the collaboration with the human sciences and involvement of theology with the other disciplines in the development of what he calls the general categories, the categories that are shared with other disciplines. Lonergan comes out of the Thomist tradition as opposed to the Bonaventurian tradition, where theology's categories are twofold. There's a set of special categories that are peculiar to theology, that have to do with things like grace, the Trinity, church, the sacraments, sin, and so on. But there's also a set of categories that theology shares with other disciplines. And in Thomas, these general categories were by and large provided by Aristotle's metaphysics. And what Lonergan says today, of course, Aristotle's metaphysics is not what's going to prove. He's not. He'll bring Aristotle's metaphysics forward, as you would know if you've read Insight, where you've got a peculiar take on potency, form, and act, which is brilliant in my view, and not contrary to Aristotle, but certainly far beyond what Aristotle was on to, I think, or was able explicitly to say. But the general categories are going to be provided by theology's interchange with other disciplines, primarily philosophy and the human sciences, but also in certain areas of theology, you're going to have to get into the natural sciences. Contemporary theology of creation, contemporary theology of death, a contemporary theology of evolution, is going to have to be involved in the general categories that come out of those sciences. So Lonergan suggests in several of his writings, including Method and Theology, that perhaps insight the book Insight can provide the heuristic structure for the development of the general categories. But it's not Insight that will give you those. It's the other sciences that will give you. So Insight is a heuristic structure for it. Anyway, in this article, he's calling for different levels of interchange with the human sciences than this on the part of moral theology, on the part of Christian ethics, depending on what the question before the moral theologian is. And then I just have this comment here. It would be well worth the time, I don't know if I'll ever be able to do this, but to investigate the history of the Theological Commission itself, the International Theological Commission, simply to see the extent to which general categories are regarded as important by the theologians. And again, I think what we'll see, it's probably an unexpressed tension, but it will be between theologians who are basically in the tradition, the Aristotelian Thomas tradition, for whom general categories are important in theology, and other theologians who are in an Augustinian Bonaventurian tradition without too much interchange with the best in the Thomist tradition, for whom they are not that important. The general categories would not be that important. Okay, so what is the relationship between moral theology and the human sciences? Well, Lonergan says it depends on what case, what you're dealing with. And he starts with three different cases because there's a diversity of issues involved. But the main question is the relationship between moral theology and the human sciences in conjunction in the renovation of human society. So working together to bring about a better society. The three cases are, well, there would be some cases where the science itself and its possible scientific applications are not in doubt. So to a large extent, medicine, highly developed in compared to a lot of other disciplines, and certainly with respect to some areas at least. So the possible applications of contemporary medicine, not in doubt. But then you have a lot of other sciences that are not sufficiently determinate yet to yield concrete applications, because you've got many different strands in these sciences. For instance, sociology. And I think that's what he's probably thinking of here, because he throws in the footnote to Gibson Winter's Elements for a Social Ethic. And what Winter is doing in that book is comparing the different strands in sociology. There's the behaviorist, there's the functionalist, there's the voluntarist, there's the intentional, and so on, intentionality orientation in sociology. And then trying to suggest not that one is better than the other, but that one is useful for certain kinds of sociological questions and another for other kinds of sociological questions and so on. So there's this all this matter when theology is entering into discussion with sociology, for instance, there's going to be a need for dialogue and feedback and probably a better refinement of the discipline, so that in some sense maybe some kind of unified approach might be taken at some point, which is what Winter is heading towards. But the unified approach is not going to be worked out logically in terms of content, but heuristically in terms of method. And Winter is on to that, doesn't use that language, but it's one of the reasons I think that Lonergan was so favorable to that book, Elements for a Social Ethic. It really is a very good book. It's been years since I've read it, but it's very good. And then finally, we have some areas where the science itself is open to suspicion for ideology, open that it contains, it shows a lot of dialectical conflict, serious defects, and that was certainly his judgment of contemporary economics and the reason that he tried to work out an economic theory, and certainly provides a basis for one anyway, that is completely very different from anything that's current in economic society and economic thinking. To get away from ideology, both the ideology that supports the multinational corporations, and we'll see this next... No, is it? It's this week. Is Healing and Creating this week?
No,
that's next week. The multinationals come in for quite a banging in that paper, multinational corporations, but also the ideology of Marxism as well. Gutierrez, I think, I've mentioned this in other classes, Gutierrez is the one who... There was a comment by Gutierrez at a meeting at Notre Dame on toward Vatican III that was part of what helped Lonergan make his decision after he finished Method to return to economics rather than to go on into Christology. And it was Gutierrez's comment that the Latin American scene is desperately in need of an adequate economic theory, and that neither Marxism nor capitalism is doing the job. So that's one of the things that, one of the influences that led him to go back to work that he had done in economics earlier. Okay, what then is human science? So that's the, this was the first thing that he takes up in the paper after discussing these three cases. So in other words, the three cases, it's the theologian is in a different position depending on what science it is that he or she is dealing with here. What is human science? Well, as science, it must be empirical. There are no true factual judgments without a foundation in the relevant data. But relevant data, and this would be denied by a lot of human scientists, but relevant data include the data of consciousness as well as the data of sense. And so the empirical principle for Lonergan is not behaviorist, it's not positivist, it doesn't confine human knowledge to the world of experience in that narrow sense of experience, nor does it confuse factual judgments and judgments of value. It takes them all into consideration, and it knows the difference between a factual judgment and a judgment of value. This is a factual judgment, this is what should be is a judgment of value. So those are different types of judgments. So a human science follows the same path as any other science. Observations yield descriptions. Contrasting descriptions yield problems. Problems sooner or later lead to discoveries. Discoveries are formulated in hypotheses. Hypotheses are expanded in processes of experimentation. Experiments yield new observations, which either confirm the hypothesis or lead to new discovery, hypothesis, experiment, and so on indefinitely. So such science, like any other science, is hypothesis. It is theory. It is system. It is not knowledge in the sense of virtually unconditioned judgments. Science does not claim to be true. It claims to be the best available scientific opinion of the day. And it can't claim anything more than that, and it knows that because not all the data have been accounted for. Other data may develop. Other hypotheses may give a better explanation of the data that we have, and so on. So human science, like any other science, claims no more than probability. It does not offer demonstration, but the best available contemporary opinion, and it implies a continuity of theory and practice as distinct parts of a single reality rather than a separation of theory and practice as in the classical notion of science. Now, this business about it claims no more than probability, it's just the best available scientific opinion. On the other hand, a scientific theory or hypothesis that has been verified over and over and over again under different experimental situations and conditions is probably true. Okay, but that's the most we can say about it. It's probably true. But there is, it's worth paying attention to if the verification continues to yield positive results. Okay, that's the first part of what human science would be. But a human science, as human, is also subject to a dialectical principle, different from the natural sciences. There's no good and evil in subatomic particles. But the data on human beings are ambiguous. Human actions may be good or evil. Our statements may be true or false. People may be telling the truth or lying. Our development may be authentic or unauthentic. And this ambiguity affects the very data on which the sciences, on which the science rises and rests. So the sociologist is studying society. Well, the social data are a product of a combination of authenticity and unauthenticity. So there's authenticity built into, objectified in the social structures to a certain extent, but there's also unauthenticity. There's greed, there's ignorance, there's power, domination, and so on. built right into the data, because they're studying social structures. And as he emphasizes in another paper that we'll be reading for next week, social alienation is a function of social structures that have lost contact with the needs of the people.
Can I just ask a quick
question? Yes, sure, anytime.
I guess I'm just thinking of the first phase of theology. It sounds like that's what this is. And my understanding is that that doesn't require the authenticity so much of the interpreter as the second phase, what does.
This is more than theology, though, first of all.
Right.
Because what he's talking about here is there's an analogy between the structure of theology to the eight functional specialties, and any human science would have the same eight functional specialties. So in that sense, it would be similar. But he's talking here about the human sciences, first of all. So it's not, and so the data would not be the data so much for theology in terms of. It would be data for theology. It would be data for moral theology, because moral theology is addressing itself to concrete human situations, and so the situation itself is part of the data for the theology. And what he's saying is that that situation is marked by progress and decline, authenticity and unauthenticity, justice and injustice together. And by the time you get to dialectic in the study of the situation, you become aware of that, and you must take a stand on what in this social situation stems from collective responsibility and what stems from collective bias. So those issues are raised as the science continues to go along. But what he's saying here is that differently from the physics, the data themselves have built into them the tension between authenticity and inauthenticity, because the data result from human beings in community being authentic and unauthentic, so that any situation is going to be marked by what we've come to call sinful social structures, but also perhaps social structures that result from human authenticity and grace. And so discernment of a social situation, discernment has to be brought into studying situations and analyzing them to specify, well, what is from authenticity and what isn't, or what you know. So does that help? No. Okay. So the thing is, it's like the Lonergan's notion. Chapter 7 of Insight has a very interesting title: Common Sense as Object. It's not the object of common sense, but common sense as object. And what he's after there is the objective social situation created by human common sense is an objectification of bias and authenticity, both. So it's like Hegel's objective spirit, but it's not within an idealist framework. For Lonergan, it's very concrete and realistic. Maybe that's going a little too far, but I've always found that common sense, that the chapter 6 is called the subject of common sense. Okay, that's the subject. But this chapter 7 is common sense as object, and he's talking about the objective social situation created by common sense and studied by the philosopher. That's what he's doing in Insight, but also by the human scientist. So error, evil, unauthenticity are not merely an absence of intelligibility. Newton found that there was an absence of intelligibility if you kept asking the question about some push keeping things in motion. Okay, that because no one could ever find what was doing the pushing. And finally, Newton said nothing's doing the pushing. If it's moving, it's going to keep moving unless something stops it. So there's an absence of an expected intelligibility when you're looking for some force that's pushing something and moving. Okay, but in the human sciences is not just an absence of intelligibility, but an unintelligible absence. So the very absence of intelligibility is itself unintelligible and is irreducible to any. And even when you get the inverse insight that there's no intelligibility to be found here, you can't just go on. You still have to raise the question, well, is there anything that can be done about this when there is no intelligibility? And at that point, the human sciences yield to the theological in the best they would yield to some kind of presence of grace and so on. If there's going to be, so for Lonergan, the structure of history is progress resulting from authenticity, decline from unauthenticity, and redemption, all three working at the same time in any social situation. So dialectic applies to the process itself insofar as it results from bias. This is the minor dialectic of sin that changes progress into decline, decline into disaster. But there's also a major dialectic in the subjective spirit of darkness that not only would act out of bias, but would justify the bias itself. So you can find the bias operative in a society, but when you call attention to it, you find that people want to justify it rather than repent of it, confess it, change. They try to justify the bias out of which they're working. So, you know, the maximization of profit. I was laughed at once in a class way back at Marquette University teaching undergraduates theology when I said that Lonergan was creating an economic system where profit will occur, but the maximization of profit is regarded as an illegitimate motive. Laughter from the undergraduates. Well, this is the refusal to face the fact that there might be a bias operative here, justifying the bias. So, resorting to ideology to do so, resorting to power to get its way, setting off a contrary ideology in those who have been suppressed. So there can be the ideology, and so you get battles of ideologies, and then ideologies themselves splinter, divide, conflict. In the resultant confusion, people speculate on utopia, put their confidence in leaders, or sink into apathy and despair. So that's what human sciences are dealing with when they're dealing with social situations. They're dealing with that empirical. It's all empirical, and it's all also marked by dialectic. Now, this same thing can happen in the scientific community. So if the moral theologian's operating with human scientists, he's going to find this dialectic of authenticity and unauthenticity there as well, of course, as in the theological community. So, but he or she is going to have to consider not only the moral issues that arise in the objects studied in the human sciences, but also the moral issues that arise in the subjects that do the studying. And so in reading sociologists, you have to be on the lookout for positions and counterpositions coming from bias or from authenticity. Just as sin and the justification of sin by ideology are to be found on the side of the object, so too they may infect the scientific subject. In particular, ideology is contagious, and the warfare of conflicting ideologies is stultifying. If you've ever been in a department of a university where it's marked mainly by a warfare of conflicting ideologies, nothing moves, you know, and you can't. The hiring, every time they need to hire somebody, it's another war that breaks out. You know? Where is the science to turn, especially if its practitioners eschew all theological and philosophical issues? So he's raising all of these questions, and the people in the Vatican reading this would probably say, what in the world is he talking about? All we want to know is how moral theology should be working with these sciences. And he's saying, well, this is the problem that you're dealing with. Okay? So then he turns finally to functions of moral theology under these circumstances. And he goes back to the three cases that he started with. Case three is where the challenge really comes to light. Case three, where you have a science like, for instance, economics, which for him is infected with ideology, and has very serious defects in its present condition. The perpetuation of social evils by the strict justice of an eye for an eye is broken by Christian charity, forgiveness, mercy. The determinisms of the technology, the economy, the polity, the social-cultural heritage can be withstood by Christian hope. The ineffectualness of truth in the midst of passionately competing ideologies is remedied by the power of faith. This would be what theology would be bringing into this. Well, I mean, it sounds too easy, and it probably is. The general procedure to be followed is advancing positions and reversing counterpositions, where the diagnostic is set by religious, moral, and intellectual conversion. So it's the same at the bottom here. Well, I'll just continue. Positions are developed by finding ever more situations in which faith, hope, charity advance the cause of the good. Counterpositions are reversed inasmuch as Christian acceptance of suffering robs evil of its power to blind, to threaten, to endure. Specific procedures depend on the case. In case one, where the science knows what it's doing and the applications are clear, then the matter is fairly simple. The moral theologian has to enter in there and can have moral base, some moral precepts, but the science itself knows basically what it's doing. And the applications of a lot of things in medicine are clear. They're either going to kill or they're going to give life. And so this is not to say medical ethics is easy, but the science of medicine is further advanced than a lot of the other sciences that he's talking about here. Case two, moral theologians and human scientists will be involved together in an experimental process that brings about a development of social policy. And so, again, he's suggesting, and this is something that he was doing from the mid-60s on, that theology read Gibson Winter and his analysis of the different sociologies to get clear directions on the strong points and the weak points of the different approaches in sociology and some hope to bring it all together into one major kind of sociological synthesis. And then further inspiration from Paul Ricoeur, who is doing precisely, as Lonergan has said many times, precisely what he's talking about, advancing positions, reversing counterpositions, finding what is to be preserved in the work of Freud, and then reversing what is determinist, what is mechanist, what's based on an ideological or perhaps at least a false scientific worldview. And then he ends by saying economics needs somebody to do for economics what Ricoeur does with Freudian psychoanalysis. I heard him say that once too. That's what needs to be done in economics. All right, that's the paper.
Well, I have a couple of questions. I don't think they all have to be approached, but this paper really inspired a lot of questions. The first one has to do, which is a simple one, it has to do with the concept or the perception of evil by Lonergan. Mm-hmm. In Latin America, usually the theologians of liberation have developed the concept of evil as idolatry. There's an absolutization of something that is good, and it's replacing God, and by giving it a disproportionate position, it creates in humanity. I think that's the way I can translate it. There's another thing is the discussion you had with Ravi and that you had in class. I still have a lot of questions about it, a lot of open questions about it. Maybe I didn't understand that.
Which discussion is that?
One of the discussions that you had about knowledge as three aspects, as consensual, as...
truth.
Truth, as consensual, as correspondence, and as coherence. And what is happening is that... I'm trying to see the operations, and really for big issues and complex issues, it doesn't work.
What doesn't work?
The operations, the knowledge about main things like globalization, a problem like globalization, which has so much information, which includes so many contexts, which includes so so different perspectives. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to be able to use the operations to have to approach the issue and to have a clarity, because I was talking to someone who is more of a, well, he's more of a right-winged, and it was almost impossible to sustain many arguments or many positions because he had counterpositions, and that would be endless. You know, the discussion would be endless. By the way, we have to study so many perspectives. Each country has its own different movements. I'm even thinking that the media, which helps to have a perspective, a common perspective, is manipulated by political or economical conceptions. Like, I was talking to a missionary in Colombia, and I have a problem with there, because the media says something, the missionaries say another thing. But the missionaries, whatever they say, it's only contextual. They don't have science, they don't have they don't have media, they don't have the way to publicize, to make public or their perspective. So you cannot know what it is, you know, you don't know what's going on. You don't know what's going on in Colombia, in my case. I don't know what's going on in the world. It's very hard to figure out. It looks like being attentive, intelligent, and reasonable and responsible, it's easy, maybe it can be for your life and maybe for a small community, but for bigger problems and issues, I don't know.
Well, okay, two things. Number one, I mean, what you're talking about, the way you're describing the situation is simply heightening what he's already saying about any social situation being infected by certain levels of bias. I mean, you're talking about something that's really... And then, so, number one. Number two, there's no other way that you're going to get any hold on any situation other than by being attentive, intelligent, reasonable, and responsible. Now, if this means with the more complex it is, the more you've got to withhold, you know, judgment and the more work that needs to be done. So, globalization, for instance, well, that's a term that's used in many different ways to talk about the world situation today. And so I think a lot of it is, first of all, what is the context of, in which the term is being used? And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done along those lines. Now, I haven't been keeping up with the literature on something like that, for instance, so I wouldn't know what to recommend in terms of a study of all the different facets involved in globalization. But I would think that it would probably have to be a corporate community enterprise that would come up with that. The knowledge of it would reside in a community and not in one individual.
Okay.
This is one of the things that he's emphasizing more and more in his late work, that the scientific knowledge resides in a community, and each individual makes his or her contribution to that and then takes the contributions that others make. But the full, whatever is known fully at the present time is known by the community, not by any one single person in the community. There will be the leaders in the community, just as there have always been. You know, there will be people who are so familiar with the material that they can give guidance to others. But it's only a part of it. And so what you have to ascertain is this community that I'm involved in that's attempting to come to grips with this, is their authenticity and grace moving them, or is their bias and ideology moving them, or is there a mixture of the two? And even with your missionary, who is probably on the side of the angels in many ways, but if then this is a thing that I think Christian pastoral people have to really beware of, and it's a real danger for us today, is to downplay the significance of solid intellectual analysis of situations. So your missionary may be doing beautiful work as a missionary with the people. He may be very sympathetic to the poverty and so on. And maybe that's all he's called to do. But he can't criticize others of us who have similar concerns for the same kinds of people that he has, who are attempting to go to work at them at the superstructural level of understanding the scientific the sociological, the political, the economic variables that are constitutive of the situation. There's got to be work at both infrastructural and superstructural levels to meet the situations, and particularly these complex situations are not going to be met peacefully in any other way except through the development of knowledge. That's going to be a part of it, and then the application of it, of course, but the part of it's going to be the development of it. Why does Gutierrez say to Lonergan, Gutierrez, now the sort of quintessential theologian of liberation, can you give us an economic theory? You know? So he wasn't downplaying the kind of work that theorists were doing at all. He's saying, I can't do it. And in Latin America, we don't have the time or the leisure to work this stuff out. You people still have some time left before this hits you. Use it. You know? So, does that help at all? I think it's a real contribution that you make when you say that this is so complex that to get a hold of it is really difficult. You know? Now, again, if you're engaged in a dialogue like you say you were, well, the first thing that I thought of, but I don't know the person, so I don't want to pass judgment here, but not only acting out of bias, but justifying the bias and resorting to ideology to do so. You know, that's when people really get entrenched in things. So that, you know, you can say what you want, for instance, about Michael Moore's movies about the United States, both about the gun lobby and the Bush administration. But one thing that he's definitely shown is not only are people operating out of an extraordinarily limited viewpoint on both of those questions, but they're digging their heels in and refusing to be challenged on the two issues, the two movies of his that I've seen, one on the gun lobby in the United States and the other one on Bush. Perfect examples of refusal to face challenge to one's ideology. And then under those circumstances, what does the Christian do? Well, you know, we just had Martin Luther King's day, and he told us how to act, you know. Don't meet it with violence. Don't meet it with counter-ideology. Meet it with love. That's all you can do. And occasionally you might just disarm somebody. But it's, you know, our world is in desperate shape today. Yes, Joseph.
Yeah, I think that he is trying to bring about some sort of unity of the various sciences.
Yes.
But if you look at the world right now, theology and faith appears to be isolated.
Yes.
In the sense that people do not pay attention. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
And for so many people, if you are studying theology, people would ask you, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
Therefore, how would theology actually, I mean, he has talked about so many ways theology can enter into dialogue with all these human sciences, but in a sense, they appear to me to be a little bit idealistic when you look at what the present society is like. The direction is going on a different path, not necessarily towing the path of faith or anything. It is being propelled by different values. And even if you call it bias, well, they might say you're also biased in your own sense. That means they will be defending and justifying their own bias. How can there be unity, convergence in the face of multiple divergences?
Well, okay. That's a big question. But, all right, starting out with, first of all, he's writing this paper for the International Theological Commission, and their question was, how can moral theology, what does moral theology have to learn from the human sciences, and what does it have to contribute to the human sciences? So he's addressing a question that was raised by the Catholic Church in its teaching authority about a question that they felt Lonergan was capable of providing some guidance on. Okay, so now, but he is concerned to overcome the fragmentation of knowledge. That's a major concern for him, and that's throughout Insight, because he's got a whole, the whole heuristic that he provides in Insight is a heuristic for the unification of the sciences by method, not and heuristically, not by content. Nobody can be on top of all the content, but how the sciences relate to one another in terms of the emergent probability and so on. Now, this is not a, by any means a full answer to, and I couldn't give a full answer to your question, but one of the reasons that theology is isolated from the rest of knowing, as knowing goes on in academic establishments, is that theologians don't seem to know anything except, you know, scripture and patristics and medieval theology, and they don't know what the other disciplines are talking about. I would, myself, if I had any say in putting together a theological curriculum for anyone who wanted to do systematic theology or ethics or anything to do with second phase theology, I would insist that they must learn one other discipline. Enough to be able to interchange one other discipline: sociology, psychology, philosophy, another religion, whatever. But that they have to be on top of one other thing besides Catholic theology. Now, that is not so much the case. If people want to devote themselves to biblical scholarship, that's enough, all right, and that's fine. That's legitimate. But if they want to be speaking to the contemporary world, they've got to have the language that some contemporaries are talking in, and they have to be able to show that they know that. But otherwise, so that would be one of the reasons for the isolation. That's not the only reason. Obviously, there are people who simply don't want anything to do with religion, and they don't want to be shown even that there can be such a thing as authentic religion. There are some people who, you know, I mean, it's obvious that not all religious people are crazy or fanatical or morally sick. But there are people who, you know, they might admit that, you know, Jesus and the Buddha were probably good people, but I don't want to have anything to do with any of that stuff, you know. So, I don't know what you do under those circumstances. Well, we'll see next week the prolegomenon to the emerging religious consciousness of our time, that there is something that is boiling underneath that we don't even know how to name. But that's just part of a partial comment in response to what you were saying. But I do think that if you have a theology department within a university and that department is isolated from the rest of the university, it's their own fault. Mm-hmm. Because some of their people should be familiar with some of what's going on in some of the other departments. Mm-hmm. It's familiar enough that some of their courses could be available to students who are majoring in another department. That there would be someone who knows contemporary Freudian theory enough that a psychology major could take a course in the theology department and use it for psychology. That's the way it should be. Or philosophy. Philosophy's closer to theology, although he has another comment, but I guess it's in what we're going to read next week. That when theologians eschew philosophy, what we get is not no philosophy, but bad philosophy influencing the theology. Anyway, that we'll see. Where are we? We're at three. I guess we better stop there. Or one more comment?
I was just wondering, wouldn't you say, Bob, that with the tide of intellectual development today,
yes,
that in most fields like the human sciences, all the social sciences, there is an openness to or an approach to theological categories?
There is in some of them and in some people in those sciences. There's no question about that. And it's been emerging more in sociology and psychology in the last 20, 25 years. The third force, what he calls the third force in psychology, Abraham Maslow, and then, you know, the Jungians and certainly someone like Eugene Gendlin now, who's someone that Lonergan got into in his last years, completely open to dialogue with somebody like Lonergan. In fact, they got along very well together and respected each other's work very much. That's there. And I mean, and also in a Catholic university, it's likely. I mean, I have some contacts with a place like Marquette University, for instance, and where the Catholic character of the university is very strong. It's not fundamentalist in any sense at all. And there's obviously no imposition on other disciplines but a strict behaviorist or positivist is probably not going to feel very comfortable staying around in an atmosphere like that, because there's so much ferment that comes from raising questions that they simply can't handle.
Mm-hmm. If you kind of see that the return in philosophy to what Lonergan says, to the human subject, if you see that kind of overflowing into the various human and social sciences, you really see a lot of dealing with some of the categories that deal with the authenticity of the human subject and the biases and so on. And inevitably, I think you get into contact with transcendence and spirituality and emergence of symbol and all that. One of the things I find, if you take Indian philosophy, for instance, it has always begun with that, with interiority. And it has always appropriated both the attachments and the biases and authenticity. And out of that is kind of, it has developed its metaphysical positions, its understanding of human society and nature and so on. That's why you see a lot of theological kind of categories that are in a philosophical pursuit for truth, for instance. It's a theological endeavor, and the philosophical use of reason is one component in that, which either helps or it could distort. But that's the basis, and it kind of permeates the other disciplines. My guess is in the Western philosophical tradition, at least, there is a retrieval of that position.
I think that's true.
And if that kind of pushes through with what Lonergan is doing, it's bound to kind of overflow intellectually, at least. I think
there is some hope there. You know, if we have time, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also the awful possibilities that could happen to the world. We become more aware of all right, good. What I'm going to suggest is that on self-transcendence, it's so much of it is, it's a wonderful paper. It's one of the best. I'm not going to make any suggestion. I'll decide what we do. But there's things in Mission and the Spirit that I definitely want to get into. But I was thinking that with self-transcendence, we might be familiar enough with most of what he's saying there. But I'm not sure that we are, so maybe I should look at that. Okay, let's take 10.